Hello, hello, I'm Chase.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And welcome to the RTR Forward podcast, where we talk about everything and anything Magic the Gathering. Today is part two of our look into Shadows over Innistrad, to kind of asking ourselves the question, were some of the cards that were good at the time good now? I guess is the way to put it.
Mostly no, but there's a few.
Yeah. So in our last episode, we stepped through all the white cards that we highlighted in some blue cards. So today we're going to start with the blacks and lead us all the way through the multicolored to then a few of the utility lands. And then we'll kind of, at the end of this episode, we'll give an overall grade of Shadows over Innistrad and what it really brought to other formats. So yeah, we'll go ahead and get started and jump back into it. So jumping into the blacks, I'm gonna let Matt open this up because he's a zombie fanatic.
Oh my god!
This guy has played so many zombies decks. Black, I'll let you start.
Black is my color. I started playing a little bit, like probably a week after Zendikar dropped, and ever since then, ever since I saw like zombies and vampires in Magic, this crazy card game, like I fell in love. I was like, oh my god, these cards are great. I loved like the black mana, the paying life to draw cards, just hard removal. It's all time favorite color. And then so I guess starting off, kind of like a newer zombie into the Magic the Gathering universe, a Relentless Dead, two black, 2/2 creature with menace. Whenever Relentless Dead dies, you can pay one black. If you do, you just return Relentless Dead to your hand. Whenever it dies, you can pay X. If you do, return another target zombie creature card with converted mana X from your graveyard to the battlefield. Oh my god. So, I think at the time, that it wasn't really much. Like, it wasn't much to sneeze at. We're looking at black zombies. There weren't really too many in Zendikar, except for like something null, vampiric null. I mean, we didn't really have any vampire tribe, or sorry, I'm talking about vampires, zombies. We didn't really have too much zombie tribal going on. But the next set, we got Cryptbreaker, and everything started to change. But I think this card really started to, this card, like, at the time we saw it, we're like, oh, what a weird mythic. You know, it was kind of an aggressive 2-drop, 2/2, swung in with menace, cool. But it's got recursion, great, but I don't really have anything to combo it off with until we started getting into the next set and we started getting into a Monket, and this card really started to shine. And then we even saw, like, not really in Modern, because zombie tribes in Modern, I think, really hurts to graveyard hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this card. This card, I'm just going to say it's a hit. It's incredible.
So one thing I want to point out, this card has a lot of text on it. Has menace. Okay, cool. All right, so if it dies, I can pay a black and bring it back to my hand. Okay, cool. So if it dies and I decide I want to do this, so I'd assume you can do that too? Can you play?
Yep.
You can pay black, one black, bring it back to your hand, but also pay an X and return something else.
Yep, both triggers go on set, and so you choose. So as soon as it dies, I mean, as long as it's not like an exiling effect where this creature dies and gets exiled. Yeah, as soon as it dies, both triggers hit the stack, and you choose which order. There were a lot of times I would play this card into a board wipe so I could get something else back. There are a lot of times I would play this card. Some people didn't realize, like, oh, you get to choose one or the other. Like, no, I get to choose both. So I'll pay one, put this guy back in my hand. I'll pay one, get my Cryptbreaker back.
Yeah.
And it was relentless.
Yeah, I think that those two abilities there is what really pushes this over the top, is just like an aggressive staple in mono black zombie decks. All right. And it's crazy. And so zombies saw a little bit of play in Pioneer. Obviously, with the increase in power level and some of the black cards that we've seen more recently, we've seen kind of a different mono black deck in Pioneer than what we would expect to see, like, if we were doing like mono black zombies.
That's,
so
yeah,
there were a few mono black zombies lists going around. I know you played a mono black zombies
I
deck.
I still do.
And so Relentless Dead, 100% a staple in that. And I mean, this is a staple in any zombie deck, 100%.
Oh,
this
yeah.
just fills right into your 2-drop slot.
You throw this in your zombie black blue commander deck. You throw this into your modern zombies, your pioneer zombies, no longer standard zombies. I almost said it. But no, yeah, this card 100% is a staple. It's so powerful. I think at the time we didn't really realize it. We had nothing to do with it in Shadows. It was just kind of like, oh, cool, two drop Mythic.
Yeah,
it swings that legacy players want. You know, like,
yeah,
all the commander players want a copy. The modern players who play fun tribal, they want a copy, but it really didn't shine until Amonkhet.
Yeah, until later on. And then it ended up winning a Pro Tour Amonkhet in May of that following year, just because Amonkhet brought in a lot of zombies that synergized really well with the structure of the deck. But I think in general, yes, I agree. This is a hit. This card is a house. This is a house for zombies. If you're building a zombie deck, no matter the format, as long as it's not standard, you're going to put this card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You just do it.
So speaking of zombies, we got ourselves another zombie.
Diagraph Colossus, two colorless, one black, 2/2 zombie giant. When it enters the battlefield, it enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each zombie card in your graveyard. And then whenever you cast a zombie spell, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield tapped. Another powerhouse in the zombie repertoire. It rebuilds after board wipes, or after a board wipe, it's just huge. You have a 3-mana 6/6, 3-mana 7/7, you know. Again, at the time, the only zombies we really had were those weird blue zombies from Shadows. The what are they called? The graphs.
Yeah.
The graph things. The flyy graph thing. The mad. They weren't very good.
No, but they weren't.
They were zombies. Prize Amalgam, was that Shadows or was that Eldritch?
That was Shadows.
That was Shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really all we had. We had Prize Amalgam, we had Diagraph Colossus, we had Relentless Dead, we had Haunted One. That's pretty much all we had for zombies. So Diagraph really didn't get to shine in that standard block, but again, coming to Eldritch Moon when we get Cryptbreaker, and coming to Amonkhet, Titan. I never really played him as a 4-of in my deck personally, just because I was playing more aggressive. But the fact that I could play my 1-drop, play my 2-drop, play my 2-drop, play my 3-drop, and swing in if I got board wiped, or if I had spot removaled, like my Crypt Breakers, I could just drop Diagraph and replay them with my Wanderers and just build zombies all over again. Like, do you have a second board wipe? No, I'm going to swing in for 8, 9, 10.
So I definitely agree with you on this one not being, like, as much of a staple for zombie decks. Like, this isn't one you're going to, like, with Relentless Dead, you're going to play all 4 copies. With this one, you're not going to play all 4 copies. You're going to play, like, maybe 2-3 copies, just because it is... I mean, it's 3-mana, and typically that's where your curve stops with zombies, at least for the most part. And so immediate effect when it comes in, it's maybe a 3-3, maybe a 4-4, if mm-hmm. you're playing it immediately on turn 3.
Yeah.
It does get better as the game goes on, but still, like, as for, like, let's say you top deck this card, like, sure.
Yeah, no.
Like a 6-6, but like maybe a 6-6, but then it's just a 6-6 with no other really abilities. And so I think this is kind of a card that feels bad to draw later.
No, yeah, it's definitely, it's a card you play, like, or it's a card you're happy to have when you're winning.
It's a win more card. That's 100% what I was going to say.
Yep, because, like, yeah, like you said, like, if I top deck after a board wipe, all right, I'm not going to be upset with a 3-drop, like, 6-6. You know, it's still a threat. It's still something they're going to have to take care of. But, you know, where it really shines is building a board. I want to, if I drop it on turn 3, I want to have 2 1-drops in hand on my next turn. That's going to create 2 1-drops plus the 2 2/2s. So now I'm looking on a board with 8+ power. Do you have an answer? No, I'm probably going to win next turn if I slam a Lord or something. But, I wouldn't... Because, actually, for a long time, I only ran one copy of this guy.
Yeah.
Because I only had one copy. And because I just... I don't know. I would rather just run removal. Because I'd rather deal with a big blocker. Or I'd rather deal with, you know, another creature than... slam this guy. So I'm going to say, for me, a hit. But, you know, I'm not like, I don't know. Like, it's a good card. It you can play it in your zombie commander decks. You can run it in your pioneer deck if you're running zombies, and if you are, you're an amazing person. That's all I can say. I think it's a hit, but it's kind of like a yay, it's good.
Yeah, that's not a very confident vote there for you. Yeah. I'll tell you, so we're going to split this into two things here. So the art of Diagraph Colossus, that is a hit for me. Literally just a giant thing made out of zombies. So just a bunch of zombies stapled together in this giant cage monster. So I think that's awesome. I do think, yes, it's good. Like, I agree with you, it is good. But it's not, I don't think it's good enough.
You know what? It's a giant, so it survives that new giant board wipe.
Oh my, it's a hit.
It's a hit. It's a hit. It survives the giant wipe.
It's giant tribal. It's good for that. But I think this card really, it does two things. So it's okay to top deck. It's not great to top deck. You don't want to top deck this.
You don't feel great.
You feel okay. So that's one thing that kind of... if I draw this card, I want to be excited about it. But like, usually when you draw this card, you're out of gas in your hand. You're not going to be playing zombies. You may top deck zombies, but like at that point, they're probably already going to kill your Diagraph Colossus. You want to play this and additional things at the same time. The other thing that I kind of don't like about it is the fact that, kind of like what you said, you kind of hold on to this and maybe a few one drops. Well, by the time you play this, it's turn five. You've made a 3/3. You made a 2/2, and then you've made some other zombies. Well, you've filled your board, but you basically lost some tempo by, if you had cast those one drops earlier, you could have gotten more damage in.
I'd much rather play a 3-drop Lord, get in some damage now, and go for the Gary Snipe.
Yeah, I'd 100% run a zombie Lord over this. Yeah. So that's where I kind of see it as more of a miss, because it definitely that's is fair. A win more card for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm just biased.
That's okay. So that basically finishes up the black cards. So I was looking through, and there quite literally are only two black cards in this entire set that saw play.
Yeah.
And it was these two. So honorable mention, Mindrack Demon, which was the mythic 4/5.
Yeah.
It saw play in a budget deck.
it saw play in budget, and for a hot minute, it was one of the cards in like green black Delirium.
Yeah, before it was the Delirium before Eldritch Moon. It was like, because Eldritch Moon just like knocked Delirium out of the park and made it amazing. But yeah, so it's all a very small, just a small.
It was the new Siege Rhino that hurt you.
Yeah,
that didn't help heal you at all.
It was the new Siege Rhino that dealt 4 damage to you every turn.
Yep.
If for not having a deck with enough artifacts in it. So, yeah. I didn't include it in the list, but it would have been a miss for me. But
yeah, I mean, I honestly, like, just thinking back, like, on this set, you feel like black would be very strong, but, I mean, we didn't really have tons of incredible removal. We had, like, a couple Madness Vampires. That's really all I could think of.
Yeah,
Haunted Dead would see some love later. Wait, was Haunted Dead Shadows or is that
Eldritch? Haunted Dead was Eldritch. Is that the?
Oh my gosh, I'm getting them all mixed up.
So is hold on, Haunted Dead is that the that you can exile from your graveyard and make
it? It was a 4-drop. Yeah, you could discard or you could exile. I don't remember.
Discard 2 cards and you could bring it back from your graveyard to the battlefield. And then when it enters, it comes with a spirit. It's a zombie. Yes, that was Eldritch Moon.
Yep, because that's what everyone would emerge. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, black was kind of missing a little bit in this set. There wasn't really a lot of notable cards.
You failed me, Wizards.
I know.
The best color.
So moving on, we're going to move on into the red. So we've got a few cards we're going to talk about here. So the first one we're going to talk about is Cold Knight Castigator. So yes, I didn't know what this card was either until the day.
But what is this card?
But supposedly this card saw some play for a hot minute. So around like June, so right before Eldritch Moon came out, there was a blue-red Flyers deck that just kind of came out of nowhere, broke onto the scene, was running cards like Exquisite Firecraft, Gold Knight Castigator. It was running the two-drop Spirit that we were talking about earlier.
Didn't it run like Chandra in the sideboard, like the flip Chandra?
I think something like that. God. Yeah, no, yeah. It's quite a different deck. But it was running Cold Knight Castigator, a four of, as just a hasty threat. So it's four mana for two and two red for Creature Angel, 4/9 with flying and haste. It has two other little ability texts on it. So if a source would deal damage to you, it deals double that damage to you instead. And if a source would deal damage to Cold Knight Castigator, it deals double that damage to Cold Knight Castigator instead. So technically, Cold Knight Cold Knight Castigator.
Gold Knight Alligator.
Something like that.
it's not good.
It's a four. It's basically because of those effects. It's like a 4/4.5.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing double damage to it, and also like if you're playing against like so if you're playing this card against your opponent's running like an aggro deck, then you just die.
Because I remember I've only ever seen this card a handful of times. And I was playing, white weenies or green white tokens. And I remember someone played it and they sniped my Gideon. And I was like, all right, you can get my Gideon. That's cool. I swung in like 3 2/2s and just like brought him down to like 2 health or something. Like, yeah. I was just like, cool. Swing your dad. Like, it was just at the time, this was such an aggro heavy meta. It was just such a terrible choice.
Yeah. So. Because of that, this card only saw play on that deck, and that deck died as Eldritch Moon came out. So, And this card, like I said, I didn't even know what this card was until today. It obviously hasn't seen play anywhere else. I just don't think the four, technically four, five body with haste and flying is enough to constitute like taking double damage.
Yeah, especially when they're, I mean, especially in formats like Modern where we have, you know, like the 3-drop Phoenix that comes with haste.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so much like better hasty options. You can play a Ball Lightning and get in more damage
than this card.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and you play this card and their bolts are hitting you for 6.
Like.
Yeah,
like it's just, I don't know. How is this card a mythic?
Yeah.
How is this a mythic? And
Rattle Chains
last
wasn't.
Episode, Rattle Chains was horse hockey.
Oh man, so yeah, I'm just gonna it's a miss. It's 100% a miss.
Oh yeah,
it's not a good card. It's nope, not bad, a good card. No,
bad card.
Bad card. Don't play that card. It's bad.
Don't even look at it.
Erase it from your mind right now.
Actually, I feel like red in this time period had a bunch of just bad mythics, because the next set was that hound, remember, like the 5 or 6-drop hound.
Oh yeah,
it was just not good. Like, what, I guess they were just so upset with Monastery Swift Spear, they're like, we're gonna punish red. This is what you get for having one good card. You get 8 bad cards.
Jeez.
Up next on the list, Lightning Axe. 1 red instant, as an additional cost to cast Lightning Axe, you can discard a card or pay 5. It deals 5 damage to target creature. Why is this card good, Chase?
I like this card.
I think it's a good card.
I played the heck out of this card in the pre-release of that set. Like
this card was an Eldrazi sniper.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to pitch a card to deal with your Reality Smasher or your Thought Knots here. Like, easily. Yep, done. Done. Here you go. Just take it.
No, this card, so it was a reprint, originally printed way back in the day. This wasn't even Modern at the time. Whoa, let's slow it down for a second here, Chase. Turns out that Lightning Axe actually was printed in Time Spiral, which was in 2005, and is in fact a Modern set. So it looks like it's been in Modern for a little while. So just a little correction on that, and enjoy the show. So in Standard, this saw play in like the blue-red goggles deck, saw play in a few of the other like red variants as just either a sideboard removal or like a 1 or 2 of main deck, because yes, it is card disadvantage. You're getting rid of 2 cards to take care of 1 thing, but the fact that you can do it so mana efficiently, it was really appealing to a lot of people. And so because of this being also printed into modern, it also started to see play in the modern dredge decks.
Dredge.
So just having the ability to pitch, like, I don't know, one of your dredge cards to the graveyard immediately and deal 5 damage to a creature that's threatening you, like,
yep,
just was really good.
Here's a combo piece I can't deal with dredge. It's dead now. And I got a card in the yard.
Yeah, so it's a win-win for that style of deck. Mm-hmm. This card also notably saw play in Is It Phoenix in Pioneer.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think this is a great Is It Phoenix card, because, oh no, I drew my Phoenix. Better kill your thing.
Better kill your thing and put my Phoenix in the yard and then bring it back.
Yeah, for oh, one yeah. mana. That's good. No, I really dig this card. It dealt with Abyssin. It dealt with Eldrazi. I mean, very few threats were not dealt by this card. I mean, like, maybe like Gitfrog. Maybe a few of those six toughness cards that if you survived long enough to cast.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, this card, yeah, it was good. I really liked it. It's a hit for me.
Oh yeah, it's a hit for me too. It's still proving itself. I think there was like a manaless dredge, or not a dredgeless dredge, going around in Pioneer that I think is running like one of this card in like the sideboard or something, because mm-hmm. they're running just like all the lands. But yeah, no, definitely a hit for me, and a really glad reprint as well.
Mm-hmm. And actually, like, speaking of madness, discard Fiery Temper, 1 mana, 2 red. Instant, just deals 3 damage to target creature or player. You can madness it for 1 red instead. Just, you know, another lightning bolt.
Yeah.
You can never have too many lightning bolts. It was a good card, you know. Red black was kind of like a budget option in this standard time period. You played the madness vampires, you played a few madness creatures, and I mean, this card slotted right in. You could cast it with your lightning axe, or you could cast it with your other discard spells. Shoot player face 3 for yeah. 1 mana. I mean, it's a bolt. Bolts are good.
Bolts are good. Anytime we've seen an instant speed deal 3 damage to any target spell that could be cost reduced to the cost of a bolt has always been pretty good, mm-hmm. for the most part. Yeah, no, so Fiery Temper slotted in into Is It Phoenix and Pioneer as well.
Yep.
Right there, like you said, lightning axe, kill your creature, pitch, Fiery Temper, pay an extra red, bolt you.
Yep.
Like, just so good.
So
good. And that was already, and so that was 2 mana to, or 2 mana to add 2 spells, play 1 more spell, you have Phoenix back on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So that just very mana efficient and just a really good card.
Didn't this see play with Faithless Looting for a minute, or am I thinking of something else?
It might have.
Maybe.
I think it could have been also in the same situation. Like, this card was last printed in like a really old Legacy set, so like it wasn't in Modern yet. All right, I'm just going to admit that I know nothing about the Time Spiral block, because this card was also printed in the Time Spiral block as a shifted card, where they brought back like older cards and time shifted them and brought them into Modern. So yes, this card already saw play in Modern. Maybe like
people were playing around,
experimenting
with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken many a Fiery Tempers to the face. I've been killed by quite a few Fiery Tempers. No, I think it's, you know, it's another conditional bolt. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a good card.
I think it's a hit for me.
I think I'd say it's a hit for me as well. I mean, it's definitely seen play, definitely outside of Standard.
So other than like these kind of 3 staple cards in red, what else did red really offer at this time? Like, I'm trying to think, and it's just like, yeah, a few wonky vampires. Maybe a werewolf or two, but
yeah.
nothing.
So there was like a 3-mana werewolf that had haste, and when it flipped, when it was on the flip side of the werewolf, whenever another werewolf entered, it flipped the werewolf immediately.
That's right.
That was
something of Gyre Reacher.
Yeah. So that was a pretty interesting card. There was a bit of support for werewolves, but the werewolf deck never actually took off in Standard at all. There were some, I guess, budget builds of it, but for the most part, it didn't really make its way to a higher tier. And because of that, I kind of, mm-hmm. a lot of those kind of just didn't make it to this list. But I think for the most part, kind of just looking through, I don't think like red really had anything besides those. Like, yes, at the backside of Avacyn was red, but that doesn't count.
I mean, it was an honorary red. She had a fiery temper. Haha. And I don't know. I feel like red had such a, you know, it went from Theros into Khons. You know, red was strong. Aggro was in a healthy place where, you know, you'll put together an aggro deck, you're going to do okay. You know, you're probably going to get, you know, crushed by control towards the end of the night at FNM. But, you know, aggro was in a fun place. Atarka command made it fun. Atarka aggro was just, it was a cool deck. And then we kind of switch gears into this Bant Coco shenanigans, and we just kind of see red fall off a little bit, and like splashing in red for lightning axes, fiery tempers, and blue red shells. I mean, they were almost mono blue. Just needed removal.
Yeah, that's basically what it, like,
yeah,
you ran as minimal amount of red as you could because just red wasn't good, so you just ran blue. So yeah. But that basically finishes us up for the red cards. We're going to jump into our final color of the five. This is green. Jumping into, I'm already going to say this card's a hit. This card is an absolute hit. This is Tireless Tracker.
Oh, yeah.
This is
I think we all know. Even if people listening, you know.
You know.
This
just,
card.
Just agree with us.
It's played in every format, isn't it?
For the most part, I believe so. At least more modern tournament formats.
Yeah, definitely modern. Oh, my gosh.
But so it's 3 mana, 2 and a green for a creature human scout, 3/2. And it says, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, investigate. And then whenever you sacrifice a clue, put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker. So player out on turn 3, lands, turn into drawing cards, turns into making winning her games. Bigger. Yeah. So it's just a powerhouse. So this all play in green-white tokens. It was a 4/4 in green-white tokens, 4/4 in the Sultai mid-range decks, like the Bug mid-range at the time.
This was like the landfall card we never got in Zendikar.
Yeah.
Like Zendikar, which with the landfall mechanic, it was a decent mechanic, not terrible, but I feel like Tireless Tracker is an honorary landfall card from Zendikar.
Yeah, because Battle for Zendikar just didn't have any good landfall cards that saw play in Standard for the most part, other than like a few of the enchantments.
Yeah,
but like
there was like some Wombo, and I mean, if Scapeshift had existed at that time, sure, but it's just
yeah. So, but this card just a house. So it's also saw play as in Bank. A company as well, as was all, in every iteration of Bant Company, as just a value 3-drop that just draws you cards. And
I never felt bad playing it, never felt bad drawing it, you never felt bad cocoing it. It was just, it was a good card. It drew you cards, it got big.
You're seeing it today too. You're seeing it in Pioneer. So Sultai Delirium, which is another really hot top tier deck running Uro. This, it actually runs like one or two copies of this card.
Uro's so good.
Yeah, as a way to break up just the stalemates and get you ahead in card advantage. It sees play there. Some non-spirits company versions in Pioneer also run Tireless Tracker. Sees play in Modern. And it actually sees play in Amulet Titan, which is a big deck right now. Sees play in the Heliod Company deck, because it's actually, I think it's green-white, or it's even Abzan. And then there's a Selesnya Field of the Dead deck where this card is running as well. Any deck that cares about lands and is running green will probably slot this in at some regard.
Was Innistrad still around? Well, obviously it had to be around on Mount Ket. I think one of the craziest things I ever saw personally was some guy was running some homebrew shenanigans, and he was running the Hour of Promise deck with Tireless Trackers as like one of his big shells. And I think, he was running like Tireless Trackers, Sylvan Advocates, Hour of Promise. He was playing like some sort of like manlandy land deck. It was a really fun deck to play against. But yeah, no, like Tireless Trackers is so good.
Yeah,
so good.
And it's a green deck all star and commander too. Just slot it in.
Just slot it in.
It grows itself and it draws you cards. What more could you ask for out of a green card?
Probably destroy an artifact or enchantment. Do that. Pretty bad. Pass. Fail card.
So yeah, definitely a hit for me for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Up next on green we have Traverse the Uvenwald. 1 green sorcery Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it in your hand, and then shuffle your library. Delirium. If there are four or more card types among cards in your graveyard, instead search your library for a creature or land card, reveal it, put it to your hand, shuffle your library. Traverse. This card, I feel like Death's Shadow was a thing, kind of, but then I feel like this card made Death's Shadow huge for a while. It's just such a good card. I feel like when they banned Emrakul, I feel like they shouldn't have banned Emrakul. I feel like they should have banned this card instead, because this is what enabled it. This card was insane. It turn one, you fix your mana. Turn two, or you know, turn four, turn five, you just tutor whatever you want. Put it right in your hand. This card was a hit for me. It still is. It's still seeing play. What do you think?
Yeah, no. I 100% agree with you. This card is just a house. Slots so easily into all the Delirium decks. The Golgari Delirium after Eldritch Moon came out. Just the fact that you could easily tutor up an Emrakul.
Yep.
Is just that card. Emrakul itself is busted. So.
Fair. All right. Maybe it should have been banned. But like, if you didn't draw it, I mean.
Yes.
I guess I can say that about any card. But, no, like, I don't know. Traverse is insane. Like, there were so many games I'd have them on the ropes. Like, ha-ha, take that, Delirium. And then they would top deck a Traverse, which would turn into a Frog, or which would turn into a big Eldrazi or something. And I'm just like, oh, well, that was fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Traverse was a... It's a good card. It just is. It gets you out of so many situations. You know, it thins the deck. It tutors for, you know, because it's kind of plays in like toolbox decks, doesn't it? Like that's what Soultide Delirium is now. It's kind of like a toolbox in Pioneer.
So let me throw this at you real quick. So you remember Attune with Aether?
Yeah.
One green. Search your library for a basic land card. Add two energy.
That
card got banned.
That card got banned and this card didn't.
Yeah. Just think about that for a hot minute.
Yeah, no. I think the biggest difference was like the energy enablers.
Yeah.
But I guess that's like a whole another
episode. That's a whole other story.
But no, that's a really good point. That card got banned. This card didn't.
Yeah, this card, if you've got enough in your graveyard, can find you any creature you want. So that just shows you like, just how, I guess in a way that shows you how much energy warped the format and how much to just ban some commons just to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But this card is amazing. This card sees play. Like you said, Death Shadow runs it in four color variants, splashing green just for this card. Whoa. Just to be able to tutor up Death Shadow, tutor up some of your other creatures, tutor up lands if you need them. Just extremely good. There's also another deck called Soultai Snow, which I assume is taking advantage of probably Urza and
take advantage of all those new snow cards.
Yeah,
and the green blue guy, the
Ice Viper, Fang.
Yeah. Oh, he's great.
And then the Arkham's Astrolabe.
Yep.
But this card is a house. It's like I said, still seeing play today in Soultai Delirium and like Simic Ramp variants and Pioneer. Still seeing display in all in those different variants of Modern.
Is Demonic Tutor the one black pay two life? Go put something on the top of your deck, or am I thinking of something else?
That's Vampiric Tutor.
That's Vampiric. I mean, This is like you just have to fill your graveyard, and you have an even better tutor.
Yeah,
this is so good.
Yeah, no, it's extremely good. Mm-hmm. For sure, it in a way it's a little slightly reminiscent of Once Upon a Time, like
yep yeah.
But Once Upon a Time also but it was also a free spell, so we'll talk about that another time.
green is getting some power in this set. I mean, I guess green's always had power because you know it's kind of what they do, but oh man, speaking of crazy Delirium shenanigans in the graveyard, I'm probably moving ahead too fast, but hit for you, Traverse the Ovenwald.
Oh, yeah. That's a hit.
Oh, yeah. You know. But our next card is Seasons Past. 6 mana spell, 4 colorless, 2 green, sorcery. Return any number of cards with different CMCs from your graveyard to your hand. Put Seasons Past on the bottom of its owner library. This card. made me so mad.
This card made its own deck.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, because it was just green. It was like white black control. You had white black just kill everything. Turn one, kill. Turn two, kill. Turn three, kill. Turn four, kill. Turn five, kill. Turn or planeswalker, and then maybe hopefully win the game. And then I think someone eventually got the idea, like, what if I splash green into this? And then we had like Abzan Seasons Past, and they're like, okay, do the exact same thing, but on turn six, get all my removal spells back.
Yeah. No,
and
this
then throw in Tireless Tracker.
This there was nuts.
Yeah. No, it's still seeing play, isn't it?
Yeah. So it sees a little bit of play in some Golgari mid-range variants. I know mid-range is kind of a weird term to say in Pioneer right now because it's all combo, but there are some mid-range variants going around, and Seasons Pass is kind of like a one of just restock. It still has potential. I think it's just the value. Like, you can draw like 5-6 cards with this card potentially, you know, depending on what your graveyard looks like.
What's like the good curve? Like, how much mana per how much card draw? So would you say draw 3 cards for 6 mana at sorcery speed? Would you say that's good?
It depends.
But yeah, it would depend, but you wouldn't be terribly upset by it.
No.
But now you get to choose those 3 cards for 6 mana at sorcery speed. Now we're like, okay.
Now we're talking. Like, oh yeah, so grab my, like, later on, grab my Fatal Push, grab my Transgress the Mind, gonna go ahead and grab, you know, my 3 drop, and you know, just go ahead and grab a Gideon while I'm at it. Like,
yeah. And I mean, and then, like, just thinking about Commander, like, you're playing a graveyard deck, you're probably milling yourself. There's probably that one Hugs player playing Sphinx's Tutelage milling you, and you get this halfway through the game. Seasons Pass, you get a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, like, you know.
Yeah, just refill your whole hand basically. It's now this card is a card I would want a top deck, I'm telling you.
Like, yeah,
this is it's a house.
Mm-hmm.
100%. So this is receives my golden rating of a hit. It's a hit. This card's a hit. It spawned its own decks in Standard, and it's continuing to kind of seed its way into Pioneer as well.
Yeah, no, definitely going to be a hit for me too. It was such a unique card. I think that it was definitely worthy of a Mythic slot. I never felt bad seeing it. I never felt bad top decking it. I never felt bad even playing against it. Like, I never thought, like, wow, this card's broken. I just thought, okay, I'm taking too long to kill you with my white weenies. You deserve your Seasons Pass. No, definitely all around hit for me. Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. So moving on, we've got Duskwatch Recruiter. It's 1 and a green for a 2/2 creature, human, warrior, werewolf. So it has an activated ability, but also can transform. So the activated ability on the human side is 2 and a green. You can look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And then it's got the werewolf caveat of, at the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, transform Duskwatch Recruiter. It'll flip into Crawlin' Horde Howler, which is a 3/3 werewolf, and it says creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And then it also has the flip back condition, which at the beginning of each upkeep, if a player casts 2 or more spells last turn, you transform it back. So on the first side, it's just a 2/2 for 2 that you can, if you got excess mana, you can go ahead and start looking at the top 3, trying to find some creatures, trying to find some gas. And then if someone decides to just, you know, F6 and pass their turn, you've got yourself a 3/3 that makes all of your creatures cost 1 less.
Yeah, I think the real power, I mean, other than being a combo enabler and a combo piece, is just like just the pure utility. You got a bear, which no one's ever upset with a bear. You have a bear that, you know, filters the top 3 cards of your deck for 3 mana, and then if nothing's going on, you get a 3/3 beater that makes all your other spells cost, or all your other creature spells cost less. Like, it's just. It's like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like 4 decent cards smash into one. I really like this card. It's still seeing play, especially in Modern with like Abzan Company. Oh, okay. I got my infinite mana with my Vizier Druid combo. All right, with my infinite mana, let's just play a Coco. Oh, look, got my Recruiter. Okay, let's just you know, filter my deck until I get the walking ballista, and then okay, I win.
Yeah, basically that. I mean, that's it. It's slotted in as a way to just, it's a mana sink. It's a way to just get through your deck. So it's all, so like I said, C's playing Obsidian and Company in Modern. It's also kind of poking into Heliod combo in Modern as well.
Oh.
So as another way to fetch up Heliod or walking ballista.
You could you not play that in Pioneer too?
Yeah. So this card, it's currently not seeing any play in Pioneer.
Interesting.
And I think it's just because there's not really a shell yet. And
is there an infinite mana combo in Pioneer? I'm kind of behind.
I don't think there is.
Then maybe that's why. Because I think that was the biggest thing, was we could easily make infinite mana, but what do we dump it into? And then this guy finds your answers.
100%. But in Standard, this was just, you just slotted it in a few company decks, slotted it in any heavy creature decks, just because it, like I said, if you top deck this later on, it's a 2 mana 2/2, but if you got extra mana you can pump into this, you're gonna find your other threats.
When I played green white tokens, I usually ran a copy or two of these. If I switched between these and Lamphold Pacifist, because they're both just so useful, and they both just kind of serve different purposes. Like, I could never find a good mix that I was happy with, because I definitely wanted some zero or non-zero amount of recruiters, but I could never find the right number for me. But no, it's definitely a hit for me, and I think we have a lot more we could see from this card in the future.
Oh yeah, I don't think this card's done being a house. I think this card is definitely great, and it's a hit for me as well.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Lamphold Pacifist, our next card, Lamphold Pacifist. 2 mana, 1 colorless and a green creature, human, shaman, werewolf. It's a 3/3, but it can't attack unless you control a creature with power 4 or greater. And werewolf text, at the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, transform into the Lamphold Butcher. 4/4 creature werewolf, and at the beginning of each upkeep, if a player cast 2 or more spells last turn, transform back into the pack. Transform back into the pacifist. I love this card. This card was such a limited bomb. It's like a 2-drop 3/3. If nothing's going on, I have a 4/4 beater. Do you have lightning axe? No, sweet. I'm getting in for 4.
Yeah.
I loved this card with the 3-drop Nissa from Oath. Because turn 1, Flavor Inspector. Turn 2, Lamphold Pacifist. Turn 3, drop Nissa. Give everyone a 1/1 counter. It satisfies its own like weird pseudo defender status, crashes in for 4, and then if you don't cast anything or I don't cast anything, because I have no more, I don't need to cast anything, I have a 4/4, I can flip it into a 5.
Yeah.
Like I love this card. It did work. It could contend with some of the earlier Ajazis like Matter Reshaper and Thought Not Seer. I'm biased. I love this card.
Yeah, no, this card is a great early blocker for, like you said, this is a very aggro meta. We had mono white weenies running around. So this is, it's a 2-mana 3/3. It can block still, even though it can't attack. And just a great soaker up of damage. Your opponents are not going to really want to attack into this if you drop this on turn 2, unless they have something that can trade with it.
Yep.
So it really just gums up the board in that resolve. And then if your opponents just stop playing things, or you just, you know, you're filling out your board, you either, you know, dropping a Nissa and making this bigger, or, you know, eventually if you're playing Avacyn, Avacyn's going to satisfy that trigger, and now you're going to have a 3/3 that's going to attack. So you see this in like the green white tokens, you see this in the Bant Company as just a really nice pull. Just grabbing a 3/3 and some other card for 4 mana is perfectly fine at instant speed.
Oh yeah.
So just a really good card. And but unfortunately, this card outside of Standard hasn't really splashed at all.
Yeah,
and I kind of see this card. So in general, it's okay. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Lovestruck Beast in that regard.
That's a really good point.
It's a cheap, high power, high toughness green creature that can't attack unless you satisfy a condition.
Yep.
So I think it kind of fits in that slot, but I think, definitely, I think Lovestruck Beast is better. The 5/5 stats just really putting it above.
If I never swing with it, I have a 5/5 body I have to punch through.
Yeah.
That chumps a lot of Nissa lands too, so.
And I think because of that, that might also be part of the reason why Lamholt isn't really seeing play. Like, in Pioneer, if you're going to play, build like a company deck, mm-hmm. would you rather put Lamholt Pacifist or Lovestruck Beast?
Oh, well, no, I would play Lovestruck Beast because that's a turn one play into a turn three. I think the biggest reason Lamholt had a home in such a high tier deck was just because Nissa.
Yeah,
it just spoke to how good Nissa was, and this card had an odd synergy with the pseudo defender that just, you know, turn two Lamholt, turn three Nissa, tick down, swing in four.
Yeah,
like I think that's the biggest reason this saw play. I love this card, but you know, past tense loved. I think it's a miss now. It's just there's so many better. I'd rather play Sylvan Advocate than this.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
Two mana 3/3 that just blocks isn't really good enough for the more eternal format. So I definitely agree this is a miss as well.
Mm-hmm. But man, it's shown. It shined.
Yeah, it shined in its moment.
Yeah, it had its moment.
So our final green card of today is Ulvenwald Hydra. It's 6 mana, 4/2 green for a Hydra with star. It has reach, and Ulvenwald Hydra's power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. And then when it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So a win game. You know, it's a win condition to a degree. I mean, you're playing it on turn, you're probably not even turn six, because this is probably going to be run in decks that have a significant amount of ramp.
We still had explosive vegetation, didn't we?
Yeah, we had explosive vegetation.
So you could get this turn five. Sometimes even earlier, depending on what your early
ramp was. And then for the consolation, it just comes in and gets you another land. So, and at the time, this was in the format with Eldrazi, so this also saw play in some green-red Eldrazi decks as like a one-of.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this guy was your honorary Worldbreaker.
Yeah.
Like, Worldbreaker was a 7-drop. Oh, I don't have 7 mana, but I have 6. Let me go ahead and get my 6 drop down. It's now a 7/7. Oh, got me my 7th land. Next turn, Worldbreaker, Worldbreaker, Worldbreaker.
Yeah, basically.
I thought this card was neat. I never played it. It like all those creature cards whose power and toughness are based off, you know, the number of lands, like Multani and that kind of effect. Honestly, for me at this time period, I would have much rather played Nissa's Renewal. It got me 3 lands. It gave me 7 life. I just liked it more.
Yeah, I think one thing that definitely detracts against this is the fact that he just has reach and doesn't have like trample or anything.
Yep.
So like, yeah, sure, yeah, you now have a 7/7. Okay, I'll block.
How can my Thrave Inspector get any better? Oh, it chumps this 7/7.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing that definitely detracts it. I mean, it is nice that it comes in and finds you a land. And there's actually a deck in Pioneer, Mono Green Ramp, that is playing, I think, one or two copies as just a payoff. You know, you're ramping with all this mana anyways. I mean, you're running Ugins and you're running Ulamogs. And maybe you just want more lands. So
they banned Field of the Dead in Pioneer, didn't they?
They did.
So I feel like with lands like Field of the Dead or significant payoff lands, you know, not terrible.
Yeah, but you
could traverse instead for one.
You can, I mean, you could do that, or I mean, you could just do the Omen or the Hour of Devastation, the land tutoring,
which 5 mana, and that can even make a zombie if you're playing the Deserts game. So
I think this card was just really outclassed by just a lot of the other effects, and I think for that I'm gonna mark it as a miss.
Yeah, it's a miss for me. Even by Commander standards, like, it ate up a Mythic slot for a 6-mana turn, a 6-mana 6/6 that turned into a 7/7 that got you a land. I mean, if you're playing some sort of land combo, there's better cards.
There's better things. There are way better cards that could get any land onto the battlefield earlier in the game.
And as far as, like, you know, I don't care how much power and toughness you have, without trample, it doesn't really mean much. Without any form of evasion, it just doesn't matter. So, yeah, this guy's going to be a miss for me, too.
Yeah, I agree. So that basically finishes off for the green cards. Final and our last section, besides one land, is our multicolored.
Multicolor, the best color. Starting off first, we have Sorin, Grim Nemesis. 6 mana planeswalker, 4 colorless, white and black. Oof, lots of text here. Plus one, you reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. Each opponent loses life equal to that card's converted mana cost. Minus X, Sorin Grim Nemesis deals X damage to target creature or planeswalker, and you gain X life. Minus 9, put a number of 1/1 black vampire knight creature tokens with lifelink onto the battlefield equal to the highest life total among all players. So, I really enjoyed this card. Six mana planeswalkers, you always want to feel good playing it. You always want to feel like, ooh, look at me, I got my 6-mana planeswalker. This card was fun. I loved drawing it. I loved playing it. I loved rolling him up, rolling him down. The only thing I never did with this card was his ultimate, minus 9. I just felt like it was a waste of him. I was like, cool, I could have... who has the highest life? Oh, by turn 6, I have 10 because I'm playing some sort of control deck. And you probably have maybe like... 16 because you've shocked or burned yourself or whatever card advantage. So I could either have 15, 16 1/1s that are going to die to a board wipe, or that I'm just going to chump to some big Eldrazi creature, or I could just keep rolling up and drain you.
Yeah, and see, they don't even, the tokens don't even have flying.
Oh, they don't.
They're just vampires with lifelink.
Yep.
So that I think that is one thing that definitely detracts. I think is definitely his first two abilities are what really made him stand out. He was definitely the curve topper in the black-white control deck that was a big part of the meta during this time. As a way to kind of drain your opponent out, have answers. You definitely gained a lot of life off of him.
He kind of felt like he took the place of like Ugin. Like he had this roll up, didn't have like the roll up bolt that Ugin had, but he had a roll up, kill your opponent over time, and then he had a way of sniping creatures and other planeswalkers. I think that was one thing that made him really attractive in like some control shells, was the fact that he could take out a Gideon, he could take out a Nissa from the green white token decks. What was the other plane? He could take out an Omnixilis, he could take out a Jace. Oh no, not the Jace. Well, yeah. Baby Jace was still around in a Bant Company because they would only use Baby Jace to flash back Coco, but it works.
Yeah.
But no, I think for me I don't know what you think, but for me this guy was definitely a hit. Sorin is always fun to see; such a cool character. All of his cards are really unique, and I think this one was another hit from Wizards.
So I have a slightly different opinion. So, six mana, it's a big investment.
It's a big investment.
So typically when you want to invest mana in something, you want to be able to protect it in some way. Well, Sorin does kill something, but against like the mono white decks where they just have a bunch of creatures, yeah, you kill one of them and then it just dies. Yes, he has a lot of loyalty. I just don't feel like 6 mana is like enough of a payoff for something that can't come in and immediately protect itself. If he maybe had the ability to like make vampires to protect himself, like when he came out, that would be pretty appealing to me. I definitely think this card's really good in Commander.
Oh, definitely.
Just in any planeswalker deck, the fact that it's each opponent means that you could flip, I don't know, a 6 mana card and everybody's losing 6.
Yeah.
And so I think that's pretty good there. I think it really shines in Commander. But I think it was just okay in Standard. And what you'll see is this was a mainstay in like the black white control decks, but then once those decks kind of fell out of favor, you didn't really see this card ever again because it was just too much of an investment. And so I think because of that, it doesn't come in and immediately protect itself. It does, yes, have a lot of starting loyalty, but it's just, I don't know. In a way, it's 6 mana. I drain you for a little bit, or I kill something, and then you kill it.
Aha.
So is it really worth 6 mana to remove something?
I don't know. That's fair. Maybe I'm biased because of my green white days and watching my poor, innocent, harmless Gideons get drained by these evil Sorins. Maybe I am a little biased, but I don't know. Just like the Shadows player in me and seeing him in Commander, like I think he's great. I think he's got some great power. I will say that it is kind of tough. Like he's not a solo win card. Like I feel like You don't play him until you've wiped the board or until you've cleaned up the board.
I feel like you don't play him unless you're winning.
You know, that's a good point.
Like, I feel like he is a win more card. You're like, you're not going to play him into a board full of creatures because he's just going to die. If anything, he's going to soak some damage up, but like, he's not going to win you the game on the spot or start it. Like we've seen with other planeswalkers, like Elspeth, Sun's Champion. She comes in, she can wipe the board, she can build up this token army for 6 mana. That's a good investment. Whereas, you know, you play Sorin, and I think that's really where he kind of falls flat in that regard. So I think for me,
and Elspeth, is that a 6 or a 5?
6. It was also 6-drop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I think because of that, I think Sorin's more of a miss for me. I definitely think he's still a great card for Commander, but I think for longevity's sake in other internal formats, I think he's definitely a miss.
That's fair. I'm biased. I like Sorin. He's a hit for me.
All right. So moving on, we got Gitrog Monster. It's 3 and 3 a black and a green for 5 mana. Frog Horror, legendary creature, 6/6 with Death Touch, and at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Gitrog Monster. Unless you sacrifice a land, you may play an additional land on each of your turns, and whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. So this was a card that saw a little bit of play when it first was released. It saw play in like a Jund mid-range deck. It was running like a Goblin Dark Dwellers and some other removal seats, Kalidus, stuff like that, and just kind of running this as just like a value creature. So, I mean, the Gitrog Monster in general is a value engine. You're gonna play additional lands, but you're gonna sack those lands and draw cards. It's gonna give you card advantage, stuff like that. Not to mention, it's also a 5-mana 6/6 Death Touch beater. So I think that's where it really shines. But for the most part, this card kind of really fell out of favor among a lot of the standard decks. I think where this card really got picked up was in Commander. I think this is where it's seen the most play, 100%, in many of the different land variant decks. But I think in Standard, I think it was decent, but I think it was a little slow.
Yeah. No, I remember in Standard, this was my wife's favorite card, the Gitrog Monster. The art, though. Like, just the little arms dangling out. Like, oh, the art's the best part. But, no, I love this card. Definitely a fun card to play. You've got this 5-drop 6/6, huge, mid-rangey beater. Your draw, it's giving you tons of card advantage. And then, you know, with things like fetch lands in Commander and Modern, or even Scapeshift, you're getting tons of card value out of it. Like, I love seeing this card with Tireless Tracker. This was another reason to play Evolving Wilds back. Like,
yeah,
sometimes I'd play Evolving Wilds over those terrible, terrible lands. the reveal card lands. But no, I really love this card. I guess I still am biased. Definitely, I think in Standard at the time, it had to compete with so many other 5 and 6-drop cards that, you know, could pretty much win you the game outright. Things like the Eldrazi or ramp spells to get you into your Ulamogs or Emrakul, because if you had Delirium what's the next set called? It's Shadows Over the Shadow.
Eldritch Moon.
With Eldritch Moon coming out, you know, 5-6 mana. If you played your Delirium deck right, you're casting Emrakul. I think Gitrog had a lot to compete with in that slot because we also had 5 to 6 sets at that time. It was kind of sad to see him not kind of shine in Standard, but it's good to see him shine in Commander and other Eternal formats.
Yeah, he had a slight appearance. I found a 5-0 deck from MTGO recently that was Modern and had to get like 1 or 2 copies of the Gitrog Monster in like a Golgari deck. I think occasionally he'll show up, and so I think because of that, like, he is just a good value creature. I think I'll follow your bias. I actually really like the Gitrog Monster. I think I am gonna jump towards a hit on this one.
Yeah,
I think he does have a lot more utility than some other cards that
fact that in this set they pretty much made a land just for this card, the one land where you could pay 3, return it from the graveyard to the battlefield. Like, I feel like that entire land was designed just for Gitrog Monster.
Yeah. It's your own personal ramp.
Yep. It was good times. I really enjoyed this card. It's a hit for me, but I don't think it was a hit in Standard. I just don't think it had the mojo, or it just didn't have, it kind of like lacked that power you needed in the 5 and 6 drop slot. Yeah. Kind of like Sorin, you know, like he was played, he was good, but he wasn't winning, like, I don't know.
Yeah, he wasn't winning games like some of the other cards around the same mana costs.
Yeah.
So.
So what's next?
We've got Anguished Unmaking. It's 3 mana, 1, a white, and a black. For an instant, exile target non-land permanent. You lose 3 life. This card, this card's a house. I love this card.
It's a good card.
So I'll play black-white control. And so any black-white variants had this either main board, a few copies, or sideboard as just a catch-all. So this exile target non-land permanent. Basically anything without hexproof that wasn't a land was going to get exiled by this. Yes, you lost 3 life, but I think for 3 mana at instant speed, that's kind of the price you pay.
Yeah,
for that value.
No, definitely. This card was a necessary painful evil in your decks. It was instant speed. It dealt with anything and everything.
Yeah, you play an Ulamog, cool, I'm going to exile it.
Yeah, like, I'm not dealing with this. Gone. Oh, you're playing like a Baby Jace into some sort of wombo combo spell. Nope, it's gone. You're playing Gideon, you're playing any Planeswalker. Like, it was just a catch-all. It dealt with whatever threat needed to be dealt with. It did hurt, though. Like, I would usually side these out against aggro, but it was so good. It was such a good card.
And it's so good that it also made its way into Modern and Pioneer. So Modern and Mardu Pyromancer, it actually is a sideboard. It's like a 1 or 2 of in the sideboard. It's just a nice catch-all removal. And Modern, they don't care about their life totals. So
yeah, and especially in black decks where they have trouble dealing with some permanents, like tons of great removal and hand hate and discard, but Black's not going to deal with an enchantment. Black's going to have trouble dealing with like planeswalkers and other permanents. So, you know, this is a great way to splash white and sort of deal with some of those like items. So,
yeah. And it also, so it sees playing Pioneer too. A pretty popular deck right now running around is called the Niv to Light deck, which is the 5-color Niv deck. And also it runs about 1 to 2 copies of Anguish Unmaking in the main board. It's just a nice little something you can get off of Niv Visit Reborn when you cast him, because it's the Orzhov color pair. You grab that, and then you also just have some really nice removal. And so it's also, it's a staple in Commander. Any black-white deck, you want this card in there. Yeah. And that's why this card's still sitting at like $5-$6.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a staple in that regard. And because of that, this is a hit.
No, it really is. I mean, just the versatility in the formats, the fact that it was a necessary painful evil in Standard, and the fact that it's still seeing play in formats like Pioneer and Modern, and then, yeah, Classic staple. Like, no, this card's definitely a hit, and you know, I like to see cards like this running around. It hurts to have your things unmade anguishly, but it's like a necessary evil. Like, yeah, I hate to see this card used against me, but the format needs cards like this, and I'm glad we had it when we had it, because Ulamog was awful.
That's for sure. And the final card of the multicolors, what do you got for us?
Fevered Visions. It's an enchantment, 3 mana, 1 colorless, 1 blue, 1 red. At the beginning of each player's end step, that player draws a card. If the player is your opponent and has 4 or more cards in hand, Fevered Visions deals 2 damage to him or her. I love this card.
This card slotted its way into all of the blue-red control decks. Blue-red control, blue-red goggles. Is it Eldrazi? Is it Emerge? It just was in there in some amount. Mm-hmm. The Sphinx's tutelage decks, it was in there. Because it's just, it's so much value for you, and it slowly whittles your opponent away.
Yeah.
And just
especially control, because control, you know, your early game, you're not about dumping cards. You're drawing cards. You're setting up for your big finishers. You know, control deck's going to run 4 or 5 cards in hand until, you know, mid-end game. And that's 2, 4, 6, 8 damage. Just
racking up. Like, and so in a way, this was a pseudo win condition, a lot of those decks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I played this card in, like, the Sphinx's Tutelage decks. If I wasn't milling them out, I was killing them with Fevered Visions. I'll tell you that.
Fevered Visions. Oh my gosh. But yeah, with Tutelage. And then back when Kaladesh came out, I would play Metallic Summonings. This was a 4 of main board for me. It was because it drew me cards. It drew me into my ramp spells. It drew me into my draw spells that I would play on their turn. It would draw me into the spells I needed to make my artifacts and crash in. But no, and then even in aggro, I think blue-red aggro was a weird deck for a minute because we had that storm. We had the blue-red Monastery Swift Spear from Oath of the Gatewatch, Storm Sorcerer, Storm Mage.
Oh, the red and the blue for the Flying Haste 1/3 that had prowess.
I think that card, and then there was a Jeskai Flash for a hot minute. This card was also a sideboard in that. And because while this card, snipes control, it was a really good card for aggro because at the end of every turn, I'm getting a new card.
Yeah. I'm slowly refilling my hand. And yeah. So yeah, no, a lot of value from this card. Unfortunately, this card didn't really make a splash anywhere else other than Commander. I didn't see any play in Modern. It didn't really see any hasn't seen any play in Pioneer yet. I don't really know what kind of shell this would want this card. I don't really know, but it does see playing Commander, so if you're building a Hugs deck that has blue and red in it, you probably want to put this card in there as a way to kind of just zap your opponents a little bit. It also is a staple in the Nekuzar decks, which really relies on you drawing cards and dealing damage to you, so I think it's a great staple in there. But other than that, it hasn't really done much.
Yeah, I loved this card. It was a fun card. It was just a fun card to just windmill slam against control decks and mid range decks. And I would have to say for me, not a huge hit, just because it had a window and it shined in that window, and then now it's just kind of doomed to hang out in Commander.
Yeah, so I think because of all that, I think it's kind of a miss for me, unfortunately. But I mean, I do love the card. Just because we mark something as a miss doesn't mean anything.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't mean I hate the card. It just means it just didn't really do much more.
Yeah, it just kind of
yeah.
Fun card though, and I guess that leads to the last bit about lands. I guess the only real notable land other than those terrible lands from last episode is the Westvale Abbey. It is a colorless land. Tap to add 1 waste mana to your mana pool. You can pay 5 mana, tap, pay 1 life to make a 1/1 white and black human cleric creature token. Or you can pay 5, tap, sacrifice 5 creatures to transform Westvale Abbey. I don't have the backside of it on me, but I know it turns into Ormondal.
The Profane Prince.
The Flying Haste Lifelink Indestructible 9/5.
I think it's actually a 9/7.
Oh, you could be right. I don't know why I'm thinking. Oh, I'm thinking of Yargle maybe, because he's like a 9/3. Yeah. He was the pre-Yargle. No, this card... Do you remember the Ormondal Wars? I remember the Ormondal Wars.
Do you mean both players having an Ormondal and just constantly trying to attack each other?
Oh, yeah. So
take this... 9, gain 9. Take 9, gain 9.
Yep. Who has a wider board and not a tapped Ormondal? I win.
Yeah, no. So this card was a mainstay in all green-white tokens decks. This also saw play in black-white control as a finisher. When you're kind of... Your whole plan is moving their things, and so you can use the first ability on this card to make 1/1s, and then use the second to sacrifice 5 of them to get this guy. So really good for that. Saw play in Pioneer back when Field of the Dead was still legal in the Bant Lands deck. It was just another great win condition. You had all these zombies you were making with Field of the Dead. Why not sack them and turn them into a 9/7 indestructible Flying Haste?
Yep.
Lifelink.
No, this card was incredible. I've had my share playing green-white tokens. I've had my share of Ormondal Wars. It is brutal. It turns what should be 3 games in 45 minutes into 1 game in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It is rough, but it was fun when someone played a board wipe or someone played your Deck of Stone or whatever card they had to eat your board and you're just like, well, instead, I'm going to sacrifice my board and make a 9/7 flying lifelink indestructible monster that you can't deal with.
Yeah, no. So the best answer for this card, Declaration in Stone, 100%.
Yep.
People ran this in their sideboards when this card started to pick up.
Full circle.
They just had to get rid of this card because this card ends games. And it also saw a little bit, it sees a little bit of play in some elves, mono green elves lists in Modern. Oh, it's just an additional win condition because it's just, you're basically filling up your board with tokens and little creatures. Why not turn that into an actual win condition?
Yeah.
So
you can't find your Azuri or your the guy you can mana sink into and make them all huge. Yeah, I'll just pass turn, tap all my dorks and make a 9/7. No, it's a fun card. It's a, I mean, what? There's very little downside. I mean, if you're playing a multicolored deck, you're running the risk of, you know, starving yourself of the colors you need. But I mean, most of the time, Westvale Abbey's going to be in some sort of green X deck, green white, green black, or maybe even Abzan. It's a fun card. It's really low risk. It's like, I think I always played it as a one or two of.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it could slide its way into most decks for the most part. Like, just as a solid one of, and it's something that enables itself.
Yeah, so that's really powerful too. And the fact that, and it moves on and fits nice in Commander, seeing play with decks like Elves and Modern, like, and then I never even thought about running it in Pioneer with Field of the Dead when I was around. That's pretty brilliant too. But with tokens becoming easier and easier to make, like
I see this card coming around again. It's definitely gonna come back. But if with that, I say this card's 100% a hit.
Oh, definitely. I think you're right. I think we'll have more to see from this card in the future. Whatever that will be, I can't wait to see it. But I think this card's a big hit.
So we've finished up. We've got all of our cards talked about, and we've hit it. We've hit or missed them. So the question is: was Shadows Over Innistrad in general a hit or a miss?
I mean, I feel like the set when it came out, tons of hype. Like I said, our store was sold out. We were sending people to like the coffee shop. We were sending people to the Starbucks to go play their games and come report. It was, people were ready for this set, but then as soon as pre-release was over, it was like all the hype kind of vanished and the set was kind of lackluster. That being said, with the power level in the set kind of being maybe lower than what people were expecting, we have seen a lot of cards come out of here that are becoming staples, like Tireless Tracker, huge card, seeing tons and tons of play. Thing in the Ice saw a lot of play. Rattle Chains and Banned Spirits, Thraben Inspector moving on in vehicles and still being played in Weenie's decks, Sisters decks, Traverse the Uvenwald, enabling like creature toolbox mechanics. Like I think a lot of power kind of came out of this set that we didn't realize at the time.
Yeah, and if what you'll realize is there was actually a card from each color that is like gone into all the internal formats. So like every color is represented here in some regard.
And wait, Insolent Neonate, was that Shadows or was that?
No, that was also this set.
Oh, Shadow. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Insolent Neonate. We forgot to talk about him.
It didn't actually see any play in Standard. So I
just, oh, yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, he moved on to Modern and Dredge and oh my gosh. Yeah, no, like, yeah, you're right. I think there's at least one card from every color here that is definitely. So as whether or not the entire set is a hit or miss, I kind of like begrudgingly say it is a hit just because I'm still having to deal with a lot of these cards. Like I'm still having to deal with like a 5/4 Tireless Tracker or a Dust Watch Recruiter in Modern. I'm still having to deal with not so much Thing in the Ice, but definitely have to still deal with Rattle Chains, with Bant Spirits. I definitely think overall this set is going to be a hit, begrudgingly so, because I feel like a lot of this set kind of like hurt my Magic soul a bit. Like I was expecting tons of power and I was expecting tons of just craziness, and it just kind of felt very tame compared to like today's set of
Throne of Eldraine. So yes, I will agree. I think this set was a hit as well. If you look at other sets, some other sets aren't proud enough or are good enough to say, hey, every one of my colors has a card that's seeing Eternal play. And my big example here is Ixalan. So Ixalan, I don't think really any cards from that set are seeing Eternal play for the most part.
Off the top of my head, nothing I could really think of.
Like, I think the only one thing I'm thinking of is Hostage Taker sees a little play in Pioneer.
Yeah.
But like...
maybe the Merfolk Lord? No, even then, like...
that's not in that set.
I don't think... oh, it isn't, is no. it? Yeah, wow.
So yeah, putting Ixalan into perspective here, I think Shadows of Rendershot is definitely a hit.
That's a really good way to frame it, I think. Yeah? Yeah, no, like I said, like, I feel like a lot of the commons of the commons lacked luster, but, you know, we do have cards that are seeing Eternal play, and they've been staples since this set release, like...
100%.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think I have to agree with you on that the set... definitely hit.
For sure. Well, I think we hit time today. That wraps us up. And so if you're listening to us on Spotify, we appreciate you. And you can go ahead and hit that little follow button on Spotify so you can be notified as to when new episodes will arrive, typically always every Friday. And then if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you. Go ahead and give this video a like. Hit subscribe if you want to listen to us on Spotify. You can follow our Spotify podcast there. So yeah, you can follow our Twitters at RTR Forward for the main podcast Twitter to find out when new episodes are coming out and other little tidbits about those. And then my personal account, ParchedMTG, for silly memes and stuff like that. So yeah, with that, I will say adieu.
Yeah, and be sure to put a comment that Sorin is the best planeswalker ever and Chase is wrong. Also, thanks for having me.
See everybody.